Hello, everyone. Delighted to be here today, which is September 20th, 2020. My guest today is Dr. Arjun Ghosh. He is a consultant cardiologist at Barts Heart Centre, London, and at University College London Hospital. He's the first consultant cardiologist in the UK to be appointed specifically in cardio-oncology. Arjun, it's such a pleasure to have you here with us today. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here and to get the opportunity to speak to you and to your listeners.
Well, thank you so much. A couple of other wonderful facts about Arjun. Dad, husband, also Gunners fan. Yesterday, they were had a wonderful strike, I think, in the 80th minute, right, to win the match. Is it something like that, Arjun?
Even later than that, I think it was 85th.
Okay. Well, great news to you and your fellow Gunner fans. Again, so excited to discuss your kind of leadership journey. I know you've been a consultant physician for just over 3 years now, and delighted that we got connected about a year ago through a leadership development program through the British Cardiology Society. What if we start there for a second and just touch on some of the program, a little bit of the coaching, what you recall about that, and what your experience was with that?
Sure. So we have this program in the UK, which is run by the British Cardiovascular Society for newly appointed consultants and senior trainees in cardiology. And this is modeled on a similar program that the American College of Cardiology run, and this was actually a joint program. And ours was the first year last year. I was part of the cohort, and the aim of the program was really to develop leadership skills in the new generation, as it were. And as part of that, there was a opportunity to have coaching sessions from you. And really, the purpose of that, I think, was to explore our leadership styles and then to kind of build upon that to become more effective leaders. And the interesting thing, I think, was that I was a skeptic. I think the coaching process and the acceptance of coaching is at a much higher level in America. I think a lot of people find this to be a pretty normal or routine part of their developmental process. In the UK, much less so, especially I would say in medicine. So when I was told that we were going to have these coaching sessions as part of the Emerging Leaders Program, I wouldn't say that I was skeptical, but I wasn't really sure how useful it would be. And I must say, I was extremely surprised at the results. So we had around four sessions where we really had, we had incremental growth in what we were talking about. We explored a number of areas, looking at what my goals were professionally, what I wanted to achieve as a medical leader. And I was actually very grateful to the BCS and ACC, and also, of course, to you, Jim, that this program was set up, because I think I personally benefited from the sessions that we had, both in a professional level and also, surprisingly, on a personal level, because a lot of the things we sometimes forget that affect us in our professional lives have got impact on our personal lives and our well-being as well. And I think one of your main kind of areas of interest is because of physician burnout and trying to prevent that. And I think that work-life balance, all of these things are very interconnected.
Oh yeah, great thoughts there, Arjun. And thanks again for your candor and willingness to go through the process. It was, again, such a delight to get to know you and hear some of your perspectives. Taking that a little further, the last point about burnout, resilience, wellness. Boy, who knew that in the last year there would be so many changes, not least of which were COVID and the pandemic. And that turned our lives upside down. And then I understand that really turned your family upside down, right? Because you and your wife both contracted COVID. Tell us a little bit about how you got through that. If I understand correctly, you also kept a diary, your kind of COVID diaries. What would you say the experience was like going through that in your family? Because you have small kids too. And what do you take away from that looking back? It was just a few months ago.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could kind of look back at it as a distant memory, but unfortunately, you know, for us, for you, for around the world, COVID is still very much with us. At that time, we're talking about around March, April, was kind of the height of the effect of COVID in the UK. And it was interesting that, you know, I have... you know, medical friends across the world. And I was just seeing how parts of the world which were being affected earlier, the effect that COVID was having on their day-to-day lives and also on their mental health. And then I saw those kind of same effects happen to me. And then I saw those same things happen to others where COVID was hitting, you know, maybe 4 weeks later, where the peak happened a little bit after in the UK. So for me personally, there were big changes because in the UK, most people kind of stopped doing their own specialty. So I stopped doing cardiology. I was just doing general medicine because, you know, there were no cardiology patients anymore. They were all COVID patients, really about 95% of patients. And unfortunately, in the course of that, you know, I contracted COVID. Before that, my wife had COVID, but it was mild. You know, she was unwell for a few days, but it wasn't too bad. But for me, I was pretty unwell for around 2 to 3 weeks. And, you know, as you say, you always have the fear at that time of, you know, whether you're going to end up as one of these statistics, another medical worker who, you know, dies due to COVID. And I think that I probably had that fear more before I was actually infected. I mean, when I was infected, I was unwell, but thankfully I didn't have to go into hospital. But I think probably it was more the fear of the unknown before when it first started. And, you know, you were reading in the news, you know, people dying. And I think you get numb to it a little bit later when the death toll in medical workers is 50 and then 100. When it's 1, 2, 3, 4, then it's really scary because that's all that's on in the news and that's all that everyone is, you know, talking about. So, yeah, there were big changes, I think, for me personally, but I think for a lot of people, you know, a lot of people went through a very similar situation. But thankfully, you know, I managed to get through it. My wife got through it. My family are fine. And, you know, I wrote a diary for my a publication for my school, my old school magazine. And they really wanted insight of people who were on the front line helping in the fight against COVID. And it really helped. It was quite cathartic to try and, you know, put it all to paper and just recall what had happened. And the positive side as well of helping patients and getting through this process. As I said, I only wish that, you know, there was no second wave and we had a vaccine and all of these things. But, you know, we have to be positive.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's a lot. And again, delighted that you and your wife are okay now and your family is okay. Do you notice that it that experience impacts the way you deliver care differently by any chance?
So I think that... it makes you more aware of the impact COVID can have on somebody who is apparently, you know, young, healthy, with no comorbidities. And also, while I thankfully didn't have any long-lasting effects, there is a clear understanding now that unfortunately for many people, COVID, even 6 months after recovery, can still cause, you know, effects in terms of their exercise capacity. It can have effects in terms of short-term memory, even in terms of, you know, walking and coordination. So it definitely makes you, I think, more compassionate in that regard, in the sense that you're open to these kind of long-standing effects of the symptoms, and when a patient tells you about that, you know, you are very open to understanding how it is affecting them.
Well, thanks for that observation, that firsthand observation. If you would, just say a little bit more then about, so again, you have family in India, you obviously have family in the UK, and you saw the impact as the virus spread from continent to continent. There was a bit of cognitive dissonance that we discussed earlier, right? You see it, you saw it, you felt it, and then you were, you know, in England a month ahead of other places. What was that like in trying to sound the alarm, and others may not have been feeling the urgency and impact?
Yeah, I think that was probably one of my biggest, I think, take-home messages with the whole COVID thing. And when you kind of look at the cycle of, say, a bad event or grief, you have the, you know, the denial phase, and then there's a phase of anger and acceptance and all of these things. And I think that, you know, when it first hit China and Italy, I was speaking to medical colleagues in Italy, you know, is it as bad as it's shown in the TV and in the papers? And they were like, yeah, it is as bad. And even though I knew that Italy was maybe 2-3 weeks ahead of the UK and it was coming to the UK, there was still, is it going to come? Is it going to be as bad? And you have all these kind of positive things, and you don't dismiss it or you don't ignore it, but you have you try and make yourself feel better by thinking that, you know, it will not be as bad. And then when it did hit, you had all the kind of negative experiences and the fear of, you know, for yourself, for your family, for the, you know, the country as a whole. And it was interesting at that time when I was talking to other kind of family members and lots of doctors in India, and just saying, you know, what was happening. It was very interesting to note that they were kind of at the same stage I was when I was talking to Italian doctors. They kind of thought that, okay, something is happening. It may come here, or it probably will come to India as well, but maybe it won't be that bad, or we might be able to deal with it. And the lack of realization of the potential impact just wasn't there. And then I did see that when it did hit India quite badly, they went through exactly the same feelings I had gone through, you know, the kind of feelings of, you know, hopelessness and, you know, being overwhelmed by this, you know, tsunami of, you know, COVID. And again, the same feelings that I'm kind of noticing in myself now that we are getting a second peak. You know, you do see these things potentially happening again in other places. So it was very interesting just to kind of observe these feelings in a semi-detached way. I mean, although I was experiencing them personally, I kind of knew what was happening, and to see exactly the same feelings play out in the same order, just with the difference of time, you know, a few weeks later, was pretty interesting. I mean, predictable maybe from a theoretical point of view, but it's always somewhat different when you see it happen to you and to others and you go through the practical experience.
Yeah, for sure. Well, again, you had a very unique early perspective, and all of this then hints toward leadership, right? What can you and your colleagues do as consultant physicians, not only in your community? Again, you're part of so many societies, national and international. Let's shift a little bigger picture then. Well, two things. One was, we had the pleasure to, just a minute ago, take a look at some goals that you had laid out for yourself a year ago in comparison to today. So maybe we could, you know, comment on what you've noticed in, let's say, your own perspective and or leadership in a year. The second is, again, leadership big picture. Noting what you just shared with us, that this tsunami is coming, you know, what kind of leadership skills, I guess, were really important then and now?
Sure, thanks, Jim. I think that's a very interesting question, actually. And maybe again, it's not something I would necessarily reflect on myself, but talking to you, and again, like the coaching process itself, just very helpful to kind of make you think about these things and how it's maybe changed perspectives. So I think that if I look at the leadership aspects of things, I think different societies that I personally am involved with, they do have a role in COVID or any new kind of pandemic or any emergency situation to educate members and also educate the public. And I think that, you know, there needs to be strong leadership in the sense that there needs to be a unified message. It needs to be a clear message. You need to make it as unambiguous as possible. And it needs to be something that does resonate with people. It cannot be too abstract. So there are a lot of different kind of pointers, clear and concise also. So I think it comes down to something that a lot of things in life comes down to ultimately is communication. So I think if the communication is not clear, and this is from higher levels of leadership to middle levels and lower levels, and then outside of the organization, I think that's when there's the biggest issue. I think if the communication is clear, if people understand the message, I think that is the biggest attribute any good message can have.
So great point about messaging. So obviously getting the message out consistently, clearly. One of the things that I recall that was important for you, again, we don't have to go into the specifics, but you had some kind of strategic objectives for self, some goals for self. And you touched earlier on, burnout and wellness. Tell us a little more then, as we begin to wrap up today, how you notice you've evolved. Yes, you have your professional objectives, and there were some other things that I think you noticed about self.
Sure. So I think one of the benefits I got from the coaching process, which I mentioned before, was trying to look at the bigger picture and how there is an interplay between your professional and personal life. And again, this talk that we'd had previously about work-life balance. So I think compared to a year ago, I would say that I'm probably in a better place now, both professionally and personally. I've had a number of professional achievements in cardio-oncology, recently been appointed a fellow of the International Cardio-Oncology Society, which I'm very pleased about, but also personally, I've managed to kind of shift the work-life balance a little bit in a positive direction, more towards life and spending a bit more time with the family and trying to kind of better understand the needs of the family, and also how that, they are also intertwined with my own personal needs. We only kind of grow together as a group when it comes to, the family. And, it has to be a combined effort. So I think, the coaching process actually did help me with achieving some of this.
Great, great. So, and again, congratulations on that most recent achievement. Looking at the certificate, fellow of the International Cardio-Oncology Society. So bravo to you. Do you want to add a few more words about that? Perhaps what is the future look like from that perspective for you, because you are truly unique in that regard. Again, having been the first one appointed in this specialty there in the UK. Tell us more. What's on the horizon?
Yeah, so I think it's always exciting when you're involved in something new. I got into cardio-oncology because it was an area of cardiology which involved some of the bits of cardiology I was training in. So it was a nice mix of heart failure and imaging. And because it was new, the opportunities were very, very broad in terms of both clinical practice, research opportunities, leadership opportunities. And I really felt that this was somewhere where I could excel. I was very lucky to be appointed as the first consultant specifically in this. And, subsequent to that, I did develop a number of leadership roles. I was appointed the lead for education for the British Cardio-Oncology Society. I'm also on the education committee for the International Cardio-Oncology Society and involved in a number of leadership initiatives in cardio-oncology with ESC and ACC. So I really felt that this was an area where, even as a new consultant, somebody newly appointed, because the field was new, because the field was fresh, there would be a degree of openness in allowing new blood to come in, as it were. And yes, I'm very happy in that regard to have these opportunities.
Well, again, congratulations on that. And I know some of these things were part of your goals a year ago. Closing thoughts, what makes a great leader today? Any attributes, thought on that, Arjun, as we wrap up? What's most important for a leader today?
So I think COVID has really shown us, both, I guess, in a leadership and in a political perspective, that you need a clear message. So I think communication, clear message, clear vision, and a strategy to put that into action, that is the paramount, or those should be the paramount attributes of a leader of today.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again so much for spending time with us today. My best to you, to your wife, family, of course, continued success to the Gunners. Thanks for your time today, Arjun. Great to see you.
Thanks so much, Jim. It was a pleasure.